The Accidental Entrepreneur is brought to you through our affiliate relationships with the following sponsors: Digital Accelerant, the digital mobile business card that generates leads. Text the word LAW to 21,000 to get connected and learn how to get your own digital business card. And by Fetch Internet and Fetch Pro, the secure high-speed app that eliminates the need to pay for hotspots or use public unsecure Wi-Fi. And Printify, the online on-demand print shop for all your corporate merchandise. Be sure to visit our online store and get your own podcast merch. Listen to all of our sponsors' commercials later in this episode and follow their links in the show notes to learn more about their products and services.
That's a bad idea.
That's a very bad idea. And right. Hackers are counting on us being lazy and not changing our passwords.
Because people are lazy, right?
They are. Public and private cloud. What's the difference? Public cloud, Gmail, Google Drive, OneDrive, without the paid version, which is the personal one you get it.
Right.
So these are all public clouds that anybody can have access to it. Doesn't mean you can't make some of them private. You buy the G Suite, you can then get private cloud where it's not open to the public.
The shared, you're still using part of their drive space.
You're still using exactly part of the public environment. It's just segregated for your privateness.
Okay.
A private network or a private cloud is where you have your own servers, whether you're buying them or renting them from somebody else.
Right.
You're not doing any sharing with anybody else. You're in a data center and that's yours. It could be Azure for a data center.
Okay.
It could be Amazon. It could be Rackspace or DataPipe, whoever owns who, I forget now. It doesn't matter. But that's a private network. So if you totally want to make sure you're not anywhere in the private sector whatsoever, then you need to have a private server in a private network.
Well, a lot of it has to do with the data that you're dealing with, the type of clients you have.
The information provided in these episodes is for entertainment purposes only. It is not a guarantee of success or to be construed as advice of any kind. You should always seek advice from local licensed professionals before making any decisions.
The dictionary defines an entrepreneur as a person who organizes and manages any enterprise, especially a business, usually with considerable initiative and risk. People often start a business without much choice, perhaps due to a job loss or just being dissatisfied at work, and they come up with an idea they just know can be successful. They become entrepreneurs by accident. That is to say, their success or failure happens by accident, not with intention. My name is Mitch Beinhacker. I'm a corporate attorney and a business advisor. You're listening to The Accidental Entrepreneur, my podcast about how to achieve success on purpose, not by accident. Join me along with our monthly guests where we share our knowledge and help you get a hold of your business. And now on to today's episode. Just to remind you, the podcast is produced and brought to you by my legal practice, Beinhacker Law. We provide business and estate services to entrepreneurs, inventors, and other small business owners. Whether you're just getting started or you've been operating for a long time, contact us for all your general legal needs, from contracts to client agreements, from purchasing a new location to onboarding a new partner or key employee. We draft all types of agreements and handle most business transactions. For more information about our products and services, visit beinhackerlaw.com or you can follow our link in the show notes. Thanks for listening, and I hope you enjoyed today's interview.
Hi, I'm Steve Furman, the CEO of Etegrity. We're business technology advisors. We help C-level executives and businesses align their technology to meet their business goals and get the right technology for the right price and the right services, not with their provider selling them.
All right, Steve. So thanks for coming on the podcast. I know you and I have been juggling this around for a couple of months trying to get you on here, but I appreciate you making some time. We're casual today. It's Friday, so right, we just want to talk about your background and everything. But maybe you want to get into, I don't even know. Like, you and I have known each other for a while, where you grew up and what your background is. I know you were in the military for a while in the Marines, and then how you got into technology and all that stuff.
Sure, Mitch. Thank you. I appreciate you taking the time.
No problem.
So, yeah, born and raised in Livingston, New Jersey. That's northern New Jersey.
The hood,
yeah. I went in the Marine Corps right out of high school. I did top secret materials communications. I was also a wireman.
Okay.
So what technology was then, we had a teletype, which would actually send the messages across the wire, which was copper, by the way. None of this fiber and other good stuff.
But you didn't have any training. They trained you.
Yeah, they trained us how to be a radio man, how to be a wireman, how to run the communication center, which I became the comm center corporal. I was in charge of 24 guys in the communication center.
And that was right from high school?
Right out of high school. And this was actually during the Cold War. So our job was to send the message to send the missiles over to Russia.
Wow.
Which I'm thankful that we never
that
got
never
the
happened,
orders
yeah.
to do that.
We wouldn't be having this podcast if you did.
No, exactly. So I got my technical, I guess.
Degree or training?
Yeah, my wet feet in the military. And there really wasn't much in the way other than mainframes and minis at the time. PCs were still kind of
this
evolving.
This was what year, Steve?
I graduated in 79, went in the Marine Corps in 79. I got out in 84.
Yeah, so PCs, all that stuff was kind of in the early 80s it started, right?
It was the old PC XTs that went
$5.25 floppy
$3,000 for a 5.25
floppy. They did nothing.
Little machine that did bupkis, exactly.
Yeah, right.
It was funny.
DOS, but 2 plus 2 is 4, it would do.
Yeah, so I grew up with Microsoft and DOS, the old days, which before Windows came out. And I just had a knack for it. And I actually worked for a company called the Ultimate Corporation selling minis and mainframes. And I really wasn't fixing anything. I was just selling these monster machines.
Yeah. You needed like a big room, right, to put these machines. I remember my dad worked for an insurance company. He used to have a Wang deck writer where you would call on the phone, remember, with the suction cups and you'd stick it in the back.
Yeah, the coupler modem, it's called.
Like magic.
Yeah, those were the days that sent it across. I then went and I started working for an alarm monitoring company selling the emergency response buttons. Help, I fall and I can't get up. You would press.
Right, yeah.
Two home health care agencies, durable medical equipment suppliers. And the cool thing was we were as an alarm station. So alarm dealers, we would give them a 286, if anybody knows what that is.
Yeah, a 286 like computer, yeah.
One of the first PCs. But it had
that
one of those coupler
that
modems.
That was a chip, right?
Yeah, that was the processor chip. Right. 186, 280. Well, 8086 was the first one, then 286, then 386, 486, and on up into
right. Now we're way past that.
Way past that. But the alarm dealers would have the option to dial in with their computer into our computer center, and we set up a bulletin board. And if you had an alarm go off or something happened with somebody, your alarm sales dealer, your salesman, whoever, would call you and go, "Hey, Mitch, I hear your mom was, you know, had an incident. Is she okay?" Now, you don't think about that now, the impact it had.
Right.
Back then, nobody was connected. If I wanted to talk to somebody, I sent them a letter.
Right.
Maybe I called them on the phone if I was lucky. But in the Marine Corps, we didn't get any kind of communication. We were sending letters to people, and I find out 3 weeks later if they were alive or not.
Yeah.
So this is a really cool tool, and I ended up going out to alarm dealers' offices and installing these PCs and setting them up for them.
Oh. It was a system that the – installers would use, not the people that monitored the
alarm. No, the monitoring station, which is where I worked, AMSAS Corp was the name of it. We would go out and install them for the alarm dealers who were selling alarm monitoring service.
But when the person pushed the button, they reached your company.
They reached the hospital. Or they reached us, and in some cases direct to the hospital, depending on what the case was.
Got it.
But yeah, and then we would dispatch an ambulance to their residence and hopefully save them.
Right, hopefully.
So I was installing all these PCs, and I started to think to myself, well, you know, I could probably make a little business out of this. I mean, I'm doing it after I'm doing my sales job during the day anyway, and I started with doing it nights and weekends. And
you were just doing it to help these guys out?
Just doing it to help them out, plus I was doing my sales. So when they didn't want to pay me commissions for whatever reasons, we'll just say we didn't get along too well, I said, you know, I'll just start my own business. And I just started installing, and I remember my first installation – it was a law firm, and they paid me up front. I bought the equipment, I installed it, and what the money was left over was what my profit was. And that's kind of how I got started. And then I would just start installing and setting up equipment. And then I got certified as an engineer, got my MCSE. At the time, there was Novell, which for those of you that
Novell,
are way back,
wow.
I got my CNE and certified network engineer from Novell. And then it just kind of morphed, and I changed the name from SF Associates to CompUnite. I figured I'd do computers. I work at night, and CompUnite was born.
Okay.
And I did, you know, installation of networks. Back then, it was BNC and Lantastic and OS2. And
wow.
It was a wild frontier. We actually had – this is kind of funny – but BNC connectors, nothing but coax, like your cable in your house.
Right.
And you put resistors, 50-ohm resistors, one on each end. And what it really does is it bounces the signal between the resistors.
Yeah.
That's how it sends a signal out to the desktops. And you, like, take – so let's say it's a line with my finger at a line here and here. You just take off the middle – out to someone's desk, and it would then send the signal down to a resistor and bounce back out and go down the other side.
That's the way it worked in those days?
That was crazy technology when you think about what it did.
Yeah.
Those were our networks. So if the cable got loose or a resistor fell off, you had to then trace the wire. So imagine a couple hundred units and you're not trying to figure out where the signal loss is.
There wasn't any software that was monitoring the network where you could just say, oh, there's a weak signal there or something. Nothing.
That came many, many years later.
Yeah. Okay.
Many years later. And they came out with testers, BNC testers and things like that. But yeah, it took a while. So I did my IT business was going pretty good. I didn't know anything about monthly recurring revenues. I was just, you know, installing PCs, servicing people, supporting them. Customer first was always our motto. And in 2003, I got into online data backup. So I'd always been.
So you were doing that for a long time, like 20 years.
Yeah, for a long time.
Okay.
I always was highly concerned about data loss because, you know, your data is your most valuable asset.
Right.
And if you lose it and you can't restore it.
Right. And people had that, right? Hard drives would crash. You'd have to try and get the data. We didn't have clouds in those days. Yeah.
No, you had a 5 megabyte hard drive, where if you were lucky, you had a 5 megabyte hard drive.
Now you can get that on a flash drive, right? Now, Steve, what in those days, what was the life of a hard drive? Like, how long should it have last? I know now it's like, it should be like, what, 5 to 7 years or something like
that? Yeah, 5 to 7 years.
Same thing then? Right.
No, it really didn't have a life expectancy because nobody knew it hadn't lived that long yet.
Just waiting for it to die.
And we didn't really know. Some lasted longer than others, you know. But I started doing online data backup, and I spent $100,000 of money that I borrowed because I didn't have it to buy my first 1 terabyte license, which, you know, think about 2003, a terabyte. Oh, no one's ever going to use that, you know.
I think there's a terabyte in my computer at the office. I know. Now it's like
there
ridiculous.
Is, right. Now you get it on a little tiny pocket drive.
Yeah.
Something this big can be a terabyte drive.
Right.
And it was $40 per gigabyte for backup.
Now, this was already online. Yeah, 2003, because 92, the internet came. So now you're already doing cloud backup. But you couldn't do it like you can do it now, where everybody gets free backup and it's all over the place.
No, well, now it's like, you know, free backup or it's, you
know, iCloud,
30 cents a gig.
Yeah.
And we'll talk about the Google and difference between like your own private data backup and in a public cloud, because there's private and public clouds.
Good.
But I started doing an online data backup business and it started to grow pretty well. So I decided I would then set up a reseller channel, and I had other managed service providers actually selling our online data backup products and services.
So like you're paying $40 a month and then you're doling it out for whatever markup.
Well, they're paying me $40 a gig when it first started. That quickly came down. You know, in a couple of years, that was down to like 20, then maybe 15, then like 12. Right. But still, all the way down to it's now in cents. But it was still something that was necessary because it was instant restore and it was automated. And I'll tell you, the way that I really got into it was John Sullivan. I remember this poor kid's name. Sweet kid.
Was this mostly for companies, Steve, that did backup in those days?
Yeah, back. It was too expensive.
There was no personal backups, right?
No, not really. I mean, people had tape. But this kid, Johnny, who was changing my tapes every day, didn't change the tape. And I went to do a restore, and I didn't have a backup. And I was like, this will never happen to me. Thank God it didn't happen to any of my clients.
Right.
And I found online data backup, and that's why I got into it. That's why I borrowed the money to buy in for my first terabyte license.
Right. So for people listening who were a lot younger than us, we used to have these RAD drives or tape drives, and you'd pull one out and you'd flop them over a couple of days. You'd have a bunch of them, right? So if you lost one, you'd only be like 2 or 3 days behind, right?
Right, right. You typically have 7, then you have weeklies, you'd have 2 weeklies. So
right, and the idiots would store them in their office, and then there's a fire or a flood or something like that, and then they lose everything.
You know, the unfortunate truth is I'd probably say 85% of the companies, if not 90 back then, that's exactly where they stored them.
Yeah, in the same place as the regular data. That's stupid.
Or worse, the receptionist or the secretary would take the tape home and leave it on her car seat.
In her car.
In the hot sun. And wait for someone to take their data.
There was a small law firm that I bought at one point that they had like 15-year-old computers. I mean, Steve, they were so old, the tower drive shouldn't have been working, right? Their backup was a mirror drive inside the same tower as the other drive. That's not a backup. They go, well, yeah, what backs up to that? I go, but if one fails, the whole thing's going
to. Worse, if you write bad data to the first one, it replicates bad data to the second one.
Exactly. You got 2 bad drives. What's the point? Is that funny?
I'm a big believer in having it in the third spot, third party, away.
Offsite, right.
Offsite, elsewhere, anywhere.
Right.
But yeah, that was, you know, we had our own data center, and we were renting space in a data center. We were backing up data. I built it up to over 40 terabytes, and in 2013, I sold it. But what happened in 2007 was I started saying to myself, you know, backup and restoration is great. And I talk about RTO and RPO, recovery time objective and recovery point objective. Recovery time objective is, you know, do I need like a backup if I'm doing retail transactional every 5 seconds? Or can I get it like, you know, 2 times a day or at the end of the night because I'm just doing Word documents?
Right. It has to do with how much data you're putting in and what your real time stuff is. Yeah. Okay. I understand.
The interval and the amount of time it changes.
Sure.
And RPO is recovery point objective. How far back can I afford to lose data to where it's not going to affect my business or it's not going to kill my business operations?
Right. And is that a cost benefit analysis, basically?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, okay. And it's also what can your company tolerate?
Right.
No, if you're a company that's doing live transactions, let's say you're running a website and you're processing credit cards, you can't really afford to be down. So your RPO is zero.
Right. But it's more money, more expensive, at least in those days.
But it costs more money because now you're storing more iterations of your data.
Right.
So, sorry, my text messages. So, I mean, I was always big in the backup and big in the restoration because it's not really about the backup. You can Google my name and they used to call me the king of backup. It's really about the restoration. You know, can I get my data back if I need it?
Right.
I'm like, what's the next evolution? And I started thinking about what if you were just never down? What if you never lost your data because it was always in a replicated area somewhere else?
I mean, it would just switch
outside of your
over.
Premises.
It would just switch over.
Exactly, automatically. Yeah. And they had some software that did that, but it was costly. And
yeah, it's only for large corporations could afford to do that, right?
Yeah. So I actually started working with Intel Corporation and Microsoft, and we created Business in a Box, BIAB, just because everything in IT has to have an acronym.
Right.
And Business in a Box was Exchange, your office products, your data storage, your internet connection, your proxy server, everything you needed was in this one box. Now, that's good and bad. The good news is everything's one-stop shop. You can manage it all, and this is great, and it can replicate to another one of these boxes elsewhere.
So this was like an on-site Exchange server, but it replicated off-site.
Off-site to another duplicate somewhere else.
Okay.
The problem was the Exchange server wasn't multi-tenanted, meaning I could only have one company's domain on it. So I couldn't use it for multiple companies.
Right. You had to install it for one company.
Right. My idea was I put this thing in their office, and they replicate back to my office, to my main multi-unit, and now I can actually start.
No, but if you had 50 clients, you'd have to have 50 of these things, right?
Yeah. So it wasn't really.
Now they have shared servers. It's different. Yeah.
Well, so this was a good idea, and it kind of worked. Intel kind of was like, it's probably not worth us investing any more time and energy.
Right.
I was like, yeah, I agree, me either. And I found this company out of the UK called ThinkGrid.
Okay.
And ThinkGrid got $2 million and wrote this control panel software that would actually allow you to host your servers in data centers elsewhere outside of your office.
Okay.
It was the cloud before the cloud knew it was the cloud.
But it was the early concept of the cloud.
Early concept of the cloud. And they had a workspace software, kind of like a remote client you would use to connect to it. And it was really a great idea, and it was slick, and it was multi-tenanted, and it was functional, and it was actually really perfect, except I put on 400 clients, and everything went, ooh.
It couldn't handle the
They had no – well, they're called IOPS, which is the input-output of how much – data the drives can handle in and out, but
that's
it just
what
couldn't
these,
handle it.
Oh, so that's what causes like sites and things to crash because they can't handle the data.
Right. Run the data or memory or processing. So long story short, I knew there had to be something else out there because I found this business and my clients are kind of getting mad because things are super slow and they're trying to get their work done.
Right.
Although keep in mind, they were doing what we know as the cloud now, remotely connecting in somewhere else and functioning and working. We were doing in 2007, 2008. In 2010, after I had had enough of these people, I found a company in California called Cloud Nation.
Okay.
Not only did it have a really cool name, but Cloud Nation was built in Amazon, AWS.
That was the early days of Amazon, right?
Yep.
AWS had just come out?
Yep. And using Citrix clients on the front end. And the benefit
I remember Citrix, yeah.
The benefit of a Citrix client is it's really – not only is it smart, good, secure software, but it looks at your local drives, your local information. I can actually function either on the cloud, print, look at drives, or I can save stuff locally if it's turned on or allowed.
Right. Now you were, if I remember, they called it a thin client, right? You would have the yes. software on your laptop, but you'd be running the document from the cloud.
So
or was it the other way around?
A thin client is actually like a diskless or a small little tiny computer.
Right. Like a Chromebook.
Yeah. And all it really does is gives you connectivity software so you can run everything local, remotely on the other side. So that went well. And again, I said, well, gee, another reseller channel. So I started a cloud reseller channel in Cloud Nation.
Okay.
And in 2016, I merged my company, CompuNet Computers, in Cloud Nation with Mindcore. And we grew from 3 million to 7 million, 10 employees to 30 employees. And I thought it was going to work out great. And in a year, things didn't really work out, and I exited.
Okay.
Spent a couple of years. You know, I had been working for 35 years, 34 years.
You've been in the business for the whole ride.
Yeah, I took a little break, and I started eTegrity, Business Technology Advising, because I really found that a lot of companies were misunderstood in the technology area, but they had to do whatever the IT person told them. I'll give you a good example.
Meaning they didn't have anybody on their side of the table. That's what you do, right?
Your average long, you know, small business has no clue what they're told. They're told spend 10 grand, they spend 10 grand.
Yeah, they just trust the other person. Yeah.
And most of them are great companies, don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
But there's a few that are a little more on the unscrupulous side. One good example is I just picked up a new client that's spending $60 per user per month, more than they should be, for their monitoring and their support. There's 23 of them. That's almost $1,400 a month. They've been overpaying, and here's the best part. They're not getting the support. One of the reasons why they hired me is to find them a new IT company, because the current company they're using is not supporting them. They don't get results. It takes days to get an answer. And that's crazy.
And
there's a bit more that we do for them that really helps. I have a thing called a business technology owner's checklist. And it's 10 simple questions. Do you have a verified current list of all your administrative login and passwords? I'm telling you, Mitch, how many people
can we put a link to that in the show notes so people can
yes, we absolutely can.
Okay, good.
I can't tell you how many people are beholden to their IT provider and don't have any idea what the logins and passwords are or what their software keys are.
Right.
And then that's something that you should
always. I don't even know what a software key is, Steve.
No, that's the thing that allows you to use their software since you bought it.
Right. That's what I mean. That's the long thing you get when you get like the Microsoft package. You got to put in that whole key.
Yeah, a big long key. But that's important because that's.
Of course. You got to put it all in a safe place.
Right. Proof of purchase.
Yeah.
Do you have a disaster recovery plan documented? A business continuity plan. So, you know, a lot of business owners, especially, you know, 100, even 50 users and below, they don't have a succession plan of if I'm the owner and I'm the rainmaker and I disappear, what happens? What does everybody do?
Right. I do that on the legal side. And you know what? Now with coronavirus, all this stuff that happened, people are now rethinking and say, oh, shit, I need a backup plan for I don't know what's going to happen next.
Yeah.
And data and technology drives everything.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, as soon as your internet goes down, right, you can't do anything in your office. I don't care what profession you're in.
Well, the whole if you have a continuity plan, you
can. I'm just saying if you don't. Right. That's the problem.
And most don't.
Yeah.
Here's another good one. Like this question I love. Do you have an inventory of all your hardware and software for upgrade planning? People are like, what do you mean? I'm like, well, why should you wait for a machine to get slow and break? How about budget money that you got 10 employees, you're going to replace Susie and Joe next December, and then John and Tim, you're going to replace them in April because that's when their machines are old. Also, if you get a newer machine proactively, a lot more productivity out of the employee.
Yeah, it does improve your productivity, keep up with technology. It's funny, Steve, because if you go to like the manufacturing industry, right? It's very common to plan for obsolescence as a machine depreciates and they're willing to put a certain amount of money into it. And they know, the good companies know, okay, at this point, we're not putting any more money into this product, this piece of equipment. It was already set to scrap in 7 years and we replace it. You're right. People don't do that with their computer systems. They think they're going to last forever.
And you should depreciate. I mean, they're fairly inexpensive now, but still, that's something that should be depreciated in your business.
Yeah.
Does your provider meet with you monthly or quarterly? People are like, why? Oh, my God. Your provider should be a business partner. They should have your business goals in mind, and they should be planning your technology around where you're taking the company. What's happening in your company? Are you growing? Are you stagnant? Are you shrinking?
What's your provider? What is that? What's that definition?
Your IT support provider, whoever's providing you IT support.
Because I always find there seems to be a bit of a difference between the people that do kind of like software support and the people that do kind of hardware support. Seems to be like a dichotomy of the two. Is that true in general?
Yes and no. So some companies do both. Some companies do one and not the other. I'm a big believer in people should do what they're good at.
Right.
But I do also believe that you should have a third party do your technology support and management of your technology. And if you build widgets, go build a lot of widgets and do it really well.
Here's a word from our sponsors. Uplift your marketing and reinforce your brand with a digital business card from Digital Accelerant. Use a text marketing combination to stand out in front of your competition. Digital business cards make you memorable and most of all help you bring in new business through its warm lead generator. Motion graphics, intro, outro, and inspirational videos can be added during setup. Text the word LAW to 21000. That's L-A-W to 21000 to learn how to get your own digital business card. Suffering from slow internet speed? Worried about hackers? Fetch Pro gets the internet from your smartphone to your Windows and Mac computer without paying for a hotspot. Always get the fastest, most stable, and secure internet access on your computer with Fetch Pro. Follow their affiliate link on our website to learn more and get connected with Fetch. Printify is the online service that simplifies and automates the process of sourcing and creating print-on-demand products branded with your company logo, product, or service. Printify is a better alternative to pre-purchasing and warehousing your merchandise for distribution or sale. Follow their link from our website to learn how to set up your own online store. And be sure to visit our online store and get yourself some podcast merch. Follow the link in the show notes to learn more about all of our sponsors. And now back to our show.
Instead, a lot of people, you know, and lawyers, I'm sorry, but lawyers are great for this because I've dealt with lots of lawyers, law firms.
Right.
I can do it myself. And they become
the
de facto IT guy.
That's the dumbest thing.
Yeah.
I mean, a lawyer saying I could do it myself with technology is like, why don't they just go do brain surgery too? I mean,
it's worse the amount of money that they're losing from not billing, doing what they're good at.
Right.
It's really a shame.
Yeah.
So this is something a lot of people don't ask us. Have they had a third party do a network evaluation? I'm not saying the company you're using is good, bad, or indifferent.
Right.
But you'd be surprised, you know, out of sight, out of mind. I can tell you how many companies have users that they're paying for that have left the company years ago.
Right. And it's not that anybody's trying to rip them off. It's that your provider's too busy doing something else. Maybe you're not a big fish to them anymore. And that's the way they've always done it. This happens in law all the time. Well, yep. And also in the accounting profession, you know, well, why do you make everybody an S corp? I like LLCs. I don't know. That's the way we've always done it. Well, that's not a good answer.
But that's the honest answer.
You do an
answer.
Audit, right? Yeah. You realize, right. Oh my God, we have 12 lines on our voice over IP system. We only have 2 employees now, or we have 24 and that happens a lot where you're paying for lines and connections and you don't need them.
All the time. It took me 5 minutes to look at that one person's bill to realize they're spending $60 a user a month more than they should be. Do you have you had a security network scan or a penetration test on them? I love this one. Oh, I'm small. They're not coming after me. I'm like, no, let me explain it to you.
Or we have virus software on all of our computers. It's fine.
Here's the reality. The people doing the hacking and the whacking have no idea who you are necessarily.
Right. No, it's all random.
It's all
shit.
A bunch of numbers.
Yep.
And they take a whole IP range of numbers, and they just start knocking on doors. And all of a sudden, if they get through one, boom, it sends a message back to their bot server that says, okay, record that one. Now we know we got one we can go attack. And then they send another robot out, goes out and attacks that one. So everybody should have one, a network scan or a penetration test at least. Do you have anyone doing your third-party oversight? So this is somebody else that's actually looking at your technology, maybe someone like myself that does a independent advocate for the client that can make sure you're getting the proper IT and the proper services for the right price.
Right.
Is your provider meeting the agreed-upon service terms? I love this one. There's a thing in every service agreement that provider should be giving. It's called SLA, service level agreement.
Okay.
It basically says, if I tell you I'm going to call you back in 4 hours, am I calling you back in 4 hours? If I say, if you submit a ticket, you know, it'll get triaged and looked at by tomorrow. You
They're
know,
all that specific, that. Like it'll but, say yes. 24 hours or whatever.
And if not, you should be leery. But typically, typically it's, you know, 8 hour, 4 hour or immediate type response.
Okay.
But make sure they're living up to it. Does your provider
Because they probably price their package based on that, right?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, they're going to charge you more if you need an immediate response versus you can wait 8 or 12 hours.
Well, here's the reality. A IT service provider makes their most money when they do nothing and they're charging you monthly for it. And I don't mean they're not doing their job. And if they do a good job, everything should be automated. It should automatically do updates and patches. And it should be that they mitigate the amount of issues that you have so they have to spend less time fixing them.
Right, and shouldn't they be notified if there's an issue, right?
They should be automatically notified. But the point is where a managed service provider gets really profitable is when they do a really good job of being proactive and making sure that you don't have any issues.
Right.
So you're paying them not to have issues, which is worth every penny.
Right, because it costs you more when you do have issues.
Absolutely. Your provider deliver monthly status and analysis reports? Basically, put your money where your mouth is. Do they allow you to log in to see the ticketing systems and see how many alerts are going off? Do they send you outbound information and push information to you to make sure that you know, hey, we're doing our job. Here's proof. Here's what we're doing. So there's just some things that people should think about. Business owners really should consider and talk to their current providers about.
Well, shouldn't your provider, if you have too many tickets coming in, support tickets, shouldn't that be a red flag to the provider that's saying something's wrong here? We shouldn't be getting this many.
You know how many times it's a user needs training?
Yeah.
This user's doing the same thing over and over again, and they just need some training. And it's really unfortunate. But, you should have access to that, and they should be alerting you that there's these issues going on. And it, like I said, they should be your partner. They should be working with you. It shouldn't be I'm selling you IT.
Right, right. Now, Steve, so a lot of people are probably thinking, I'm paying for the hardware guys, right? They have to monitor this, and this. I'm paying for the software people. Whenever we get a new system, they got to change it. How can I afford to also get a guy who's our advocate to help us save money?
You just said it, because I saved them money.
Okay, so you come in and do an audit. If you're not saving them money, then you don't charge them?
No, I'll come in and do an audit for a free network evaluation audit. And I'll see if I can help them, if I can save the money or not. And a lot of times they'll hire me anyway as either an ongoing consultant for them, because I can help steer them in the right direction and get them where they need to go. Sometimes it's just organizational issues. They've got Google Drive and they got folders everywhere and everyone has access to it. Well, that's not secure. Oh, by the way, we're a medical company. Oh, super.
Well, then you got
HIPAA compliance.
Right.
On top of everything else. A lot of times
Google HIPAA compliant? If it's, I don't think it is. If it's syncing back and forth to computers, right?
No.
Right.
I don't believe it is.
Yeah, I think if you don't sync, I think it's HIPAA compliant.
Well, the compliance, and I'm not a HIPAA expert, but the compliance is all about protecting the information of the medical information that you have that you're storing.
Right.
It's not a matter of syncing as much as it's a matter of who has access to it.
Right.
Who can edit it, read
encryption,
it.
Encryption, things like that.
Is it encrypted or not? Because if it gets hacked, now it's a breach.
Right.
You're going to go through all that. And again, I'm not an expert in that regard, but those are things you need to worry about. So a lot of times they'll hire us for a project to come in, evaluate the network, see where they're at, make sure they're getting what they should be getting. And if it's a big savings, a lot of times will pay for myself. And if it's not a savings, they may or may not decide to hire me because they have other needs. Like, we have no documentation. We have no idea what our usernames and passwords are. We have no living documents for us to function with. Business continuity plan, disaster recovery plan. Ooh, here's one. We still have servers in the office. We'd love to learn how to go to the cloud, but everyone's telling me to buy this and buy that.
Right.
I can't make sense of it.
Right.
Well, I've been doing cloud since 2007. I can help people understand it, navigate it. And it's funny because I've been saying, and I think you've heard me say this before, people that work remotely – and everyone's scared. Oh, my God.
More of that now.
Hang out. People that work remotely get on earlier. They stay on longer. They're more productive.
Much more.
They bullshit less around the water cooler.
Yeah.
And they're a hell of a lot happier because they're not commuting an hour to an hour and a half a day each way.
Even the meetings we go to are more efficient when you're online remotely because nobody bullshits about
stuff. Now, the only downfall is it's so easy to just be on. And be on all the time. So you need to have some mental breaks. You need to step away and take some mental time. But I've found, and it's funny, this pandemic has proven my statements at 2007 and later. I could show you blogs that I wrote in 2012 about the cloud. Are we there yet? And the exact same words about people being more productive, and people really are.
Right. Right. Well, the cloud really, I guess that's, is that kind of when the cloud exploded? Because I remember, the cloud systems, I guess, were really third-party systems to start. They weren't mainstream like Google.
2010, it really started to take off and get acceptance with data storage, Google.
Right.
You know, those people, that type of stuff.
And then your phones were syncing, right, automatically, and everything's kind of back. I mean, your stuff's backed up four or five different ways anyway. You probably, most people don't
Let's talk about that real quick. But then we'll talk a little bit about public and private cloud too. So people think that if you store your data on OneDrive, Microsoft, or Google Drive, that it's automatically guaranteed to be backed up.
And right.
If you read the
Wait, say that again. If it's on Google Drive, they think the Google Drive is backed up somewhere else? I don't, I don't think that's the case.
Well, to a certain extent it is. So if you read the EULA, the end user license agreement on Google or Microsoft's OneDrive, they basically don't guarantee that they will restore your data. However, they do keep records of your data for usually 30 days.
So it's 30 days back. Okay.
So 30 days back, but they don't guarantee it'll be there. The other thing is there's no retention. When I say retention, I mean if I make a change to a document today and I back it up, I make another change to that same document tomorrow and I back it up, I now have two copies of that document. Here, what they're doing is they're backing up your document in the state it's in. So tomorrow when they back it up again, any changes you made, they're going to back up the new changes to the document and not the first one.
Yeah, it's like if you use Google Docs and you make a change, it changes it real time to the
–
Right now, if I copy a file to Google, that's what I use, all the Google stuff, it asks me, do I want to keep it as a separate file or do I want to just copy it over?
Yes, correct. So that's in storing it, but in them being able to back it up and restore it, they're not doing the retention piece, nor do they state they will.
Right.
And that's fine. A backup system.
Meaning you can't go back in versions of a particular document.
Well, it's kind of tricky because they do store some versioning.
Okay.
But not guaranteed on all
limited.
Right. Yeah, it's limited. If you had a backup system in place and you're doing daily, so every day you got a backup, boom, at that point in time, that day, that backup's done. The next day comes, you got another backup done. That point in time, now I have two complete backups with the different changes from each day. So a lot of people think, oh, well, I got it on Google, I'm safe. No, you're not. And I will say I use Google, and I also have my documents folder of my local PC synchronized to Google.
Right. So any changes you make locally, it syncs it up.
And if I'm anywhere remotely and I need to get to one of my documents on my local machine, I can get to it through my Google Drive under documents. So I can
because it's there, right, yeah.
Right, I drill all the way down. I modify it, and it saves it back down to my local machine.
Yeah, I think people notoriously don't back things up, don't keep all their passwords in a password safe or something like that.
Scary.
They just think that they can put it in and go, okay, I forgot my password. And you know who's the worst with that? Apple. If you forget your password with Apple, you're going to have to get a proctological examination in order to get it back and have it changed. My wife has an old laptop. We were trying to get the data transferred over to her new laptop. I'm not an Apple fan. She wants to go on Apple. The kids are on Apple. I don't know anything about Apple. So we had to go. We went, first of all, we went to the place. They couldn't do it. You had to buy like a separate drive. And now her laptop like won't charge and we can't get into the old laptop. And it's not like with PCs where you can just transfer the data and everything's backed up. I mean, if I lost my laptop, I can go back into Google, log in. I think it would all be – I'd be up and running immediately. Maybe not with the software, but
– yeah, so Google stores like your favorites in the Google browser so you can kind of cache that.
Yeah, I have
it
that.
It stores all
syncs
that.
Back and forth, yeah.
Right.
And I use KeePass, and I use it in Dropbox, so it replicates it between my laptop – my desktop and my phone. So I have three copies of it at any time.
So there's different products for Mac that do kind of the same thing, but it's a whole other conversation.
Right.
I would do want to talk about the password managers. I use Keeper.
Okay.
LastPass is a good one. OnePass is another good one.
Okay.
I'm a big believer in not trying to remember all your passwords, and I sure as hell don't want to have the same password everywhere.
Right. That's a bad idea.
That's a very bad idea, and hackers are counting on us being lazy and not changing our passwords.
Because people are lazy, right?
They are. Public and private cloud. What's the difference? Public cloud, Gmail, Google Drive, OneDrive. Without the paid version, which is the personal one you get when you get it.
Right.
So these are all public clouds that anybody can have access to it. Doesn't mean you can't make some of them private. You buy the G Suite, you can then get private cloud where it's not open to the public.
It's a shared. You're still using part of their drive space.
You're still using exactly part of the public environment. It's just segregated for your privateness.
Okay.
A private network or a private cloud is where you have your own servers, whether you're buying them or renting them from somebody else.
Right.
You're not doing any sharing with anybody else. You're in a data center and that's yours. It could be Azure for a data center. Okay. It could be Amazon. It could be Rackspace or DataPipe, whoever owns who, I forget now. It doesn't matter. But that's a private network. So if you totally want to make sure you're not anywhere in the private sector whatsoever, then you need to have a private server in a private network.
Well, a lot of it has to do with the data that you're dealing with, the type of clients you have. I mean, if you're a medical practice, you probably have to have a private server, right? Because you got to adhere to – the EMR requirements, don't you?
Ironically, there are EMR companies and EHMRs, electronic health record manager software programs that are on the cloud that you buy, and it's a multi-tenanted environment like what I was doing when I first started doing the cloud. Yes. And there's plenty of them. And the reality is, you know, does it make sense to own your own equipment these days?
No.
No, I mean, utility computing, you pay for what you consume as you consume it. Why would I want to own my own stuff?
And they keep it up to date, and they deal with if it goes down, and they...
Exactly.
Right. Exactly. No, that's... Yeah, the days of storing your own data is stupid now. I don't know of anybody who has a mail server anymore in their office. I mean...
God, I hope not. You'd be surprised. There's still people out there with Exchange servers.
Yeah, that are sitting around there waiting to die, probably.
I went to office in Weehawken and saw one. SPS 2003. I'm like, that thing's still running?
Was there smoke coming out of the back and it was like panting when it ran?
It was about this much dust coming up in front of the fan.
Yeah, right. Exactly. All the dust in the back and it gets all caked up. Oh my God. That's so funny.
Really a mess.
So Steve, now, you know, we're in a weird time right now because of everything that's going on with coronavirus and stuff. So what kind of things are you telling people in terms of the things they need to be worried about and how they need to be able to, like you said, have a strategic, what's the word, resiliency plan? Or I don't know what the word used before.
Business continuity.
Business continuity plan. Right. I know the business continuity side of the law side of it, but let's talk about business continuity, disaster recovery for the small business owner, because he looks and he says, well, I'm not IBM. I'm not Target. I'm not Walmart. What do I do? So I think let's talk about that.
Yeah, but the small guy, if they get a hit or a breach, they're the ones that'll devastate them. It'll put them out of business.
Right. They'll get a ransomware, right, for $100,000.
It doesn't take much. You know, a $50,000, $100,000 fine can hurt a lot of businesses, especially these days.
Right.
So a couple things. I'm a big believer in a layered approach for security. So if I was a car thief, I love this example, and I use it because I think it brings it home. If I was a car thief and I wanted to go steal a car, where would I go? A parking lot. There's lots of cars, right? I'm going to go where there's lots of cars. And I'll probably touch the handle and see if it'll open. I might look inside and see if the little red dot's blinking for an alarm.
Right.
In the old days, people used these clubs on the steering
remember
wheel.
Those things?
Yep. And if I saw a club, I would be like, ah. But if I go to a car and the window's half rolled down and I touch the door handle and it opens and I pull the visor
out, you're keys, looking for the easy stuff.
And the keys drop. Guess what? I found my mark. So a layered approach is really the smartest way to go. And that means antivirus on every desktop and every server in your office. Malware protection on every desktop and every server in your office. You should have multi-factor authentication.
Which is what?
What that means is, you know when like you go to log in somewhere and it texts you a number to your cell phone?
Oh, Google does that. If I log in from somewhere else, it sends me something to my phone. I have to verify it.
The whole idea is it's doing it on two different bands. You're on your computer on the internet, and then through your cell service comes the text number. So the chances of a criminal stealing your data on both sides is kind of slimmer, that they're watching you and scraping your data is slim. So that's called MFA or multi-factor authentication.
Okay.
So everybody should be using multi-factor authentication, at least for their important applications. If you are working in an office environment, even whether you have a server there or not, you should have a firewall in that office.
Right.
And you should require all users to change their passwords. People hate this every 30 to 45 days.
That's a lot.
It's a pain in the ass. But look, it's like anything else. You want to protect your information. You want to protect your data.
Right.
You got to be proactive, and you got to build a layered wall in order to do it.
Yeah.
There's no other way to do it.
So,
Well, I was going to say the other things, because you asked me, like, what are people doing in this pandemic?
Yeah.
You know, big, small company, I don't care how big you are, you can just make a smaller plan. Have a documented, living document, what I call it, of your logins and your passwords for all key management in your office. A business continuity plan, okay? Here's what we're going to do. If things go down, our internet dies in the office, we're all going to grab our laptops and run to Starbucks.
Right.
Well,
yeah.
If that's probably the best answer because that's very insecure.
No, but it's a step-by-step process of what do you do?
Exactly. What do you do? How do you do it?
Right.
A business continuity plan is not necessarily important for all companies because some companies go, you know what? If I'm down for a couple of days, it's not going to be the end of the world.
Right.
But you need to know that. It needs to be documented so everybody in the company, it's like a fire drill. Why do they have fire drills? I don't expect to ever have a fire, but God forbid there is one. I know exactly where to go to get to that fire gate and get down.
Okay.
So those are really key, important things I think every company should do. You know, take the time and care about your environment. Don't just take it for granted. It's going to be there. It's going to support you all the time.
People don't – they take it for granted how much they rely on their technology and how much they need their technology. And when things are down for 2 hours, they can't do any work. I mean
– But the problem is they don't do anything proactive to ensure that that will never happen to them. And that's what drives me nuts.
They don't appreciate how much they – Now, Steve, you mentioned virus protection and malware protection. Any particular programs that you like better than others?
Antivirus, there's some pretty decent ones out there. They're all pretty good. Komodo makes a really good product. They have what's called a sandbox. So if you get attacked from a virus, it actually throws it into this like virtual sandbox and it runs it to see if anything horrible comes out of it.
That's a corporate program, or they have
they have it for personal people as well.
Okay.
No, the usuals. We all know them. Kaspersky, McAfee, right. Norton. I give the same names. We've all seen them. For malware, I prefer Malwarebytes.
Okay.
They have a freeware version.
Yeah.
I buy the paid version.
Okay.
It has some other features that are good, like scheduling, scans, notifications, shutdowns, things like that.
Now, let's talk about what's the difference between like a virus and malware. Are they kind of the same thing? Because there's different programs.
No, they're both malicious software.
Right.
A virus typically will do things to damage or steal data from your computer or maybe lock it down like, you know, CryptoLocker.
Right.
Malware.
Ransomware, right?
Yeah, yeah. Well, no, malware is more ransom on a ransom side where it'll go out and it'll kind of track and watch what you do and report it back to other people. Okay. So if people are trying to like see how many times, you know, you open and close your email or whatever they're tracking, where you shop, what you do, cookies or, you know,
that's considered malware.
That's considered malware.
Because it's people that are looking at you, watching what you're doing.
Yeah. It's illegal activity sharing. You're not trying to share that activity, but they're grabbing it.
Right.
And malware can be malicious as well. Some malware can shut your machine down. It can remove files and delete things. But it typically doesn't. Typically, malware is just a freaking nuisance, and it typically just slows your machine down to a halt.
Yeah, we've had laptops and computers that did that, and we were like, what the hell? And then they ran a malware check, and there was all kinds of crap on the machine because it's taking up processing speed, right?
Yeah, every little bit, and it's kind of hard to explain this to people, but if you could look at your task manager and see what processes were actually running, you know, this was taking up 3 megabytes and 1 megabyte and 12 megabytes and 40 megabytes. Before you know it, guess what? You're out of megabytes.
Yeah.
Your computer just goes, it's like your brain gets full, and you just can't take any more information. Someone's trying to tell you something. You're like, you know what? I can't take any more, no more. And that's basically what happens with the computer, and it just gets all lethargic and slow.
Yeah, I've done that before with, you know, you run the task manager and it shows the CPU's at 100%. You're not running any software. Something's wrong.
Stuff in the background, processes running in the background.
Yeah, that you're not aware of.
And to produce and to do a lot of the things that you have, it's necessary to have processes in the background. The single Google Drive sync, people don't think about it, but if you have a lot of changes to your documents during a day.
That can slow your system down a lot.
Oh, my God. I look in my corner. I'm like, oh, yep, sync's running.
Yeah.
I know exactly what's going on.
Yeah. No, I set mine up so it goes at night. I can't work during the day. It takes so long.
Yeah.
You know? So, all right. So, I've been on for a while. So, what, you had any, you know, recommendations for people or things that they should?
Parting words of wisdom?
Yeah. Yeah. That's good. Parting words of wisdom. Yeah.
Your data is your most valuable asset. I cannot say that more emphatically. Don't take it lightly. Protect it. Love it, cherish it, back it up, and I don't mean well, Google's doing it, actually back it up offsite. And here's the big one. I tell people this all the time. Do test restores. The worst feeling in the world is going, oh, that's no problem. I can just restore it. And it's like, oh,
you
shit.
You press the button, you're like,
I don't have it. Oh, my God, what's going on? And panic sets
in. So when
in.
You say backup, so if you're a Google person, let's say, how do you do an extra backup of your Google Drive?
Well, one way is to sync it to your local machine so you have a copy there.
Okay, but
keep
then
in mind,
a,
if you make a change a fire here, in it's the building, change it there.
Right?
Doesn't matter if there's a fire in your building, it's still on Google. If the fire
right,
at Google
true.
Is still on your local machine.
I guess the chance of both of those happening.
There's no retention. There's right. no retention. But there are third-party companies that will back up Google in OneDrive and back your data up offsite to a third party.
So right from well. Google Drive to...
Yep.
Yeah, because you figure if Google and Microsoft are gone, probably we got bigger problems in the world than restoring your data.
Probably.
Like a nuclear war or something going on.
Probably. But look, this pandemic hit, right? What if, let's say, Google gets a virus that
the whole company's
all of Google's,
out. Yeah.
Hello.
Right.
I don't think that can't happen because it absolutely can.
Yeah.
So, yeah, protect your information. Do a self-audit or have somebody do an audit of what you have and where you're at to make sure you're using the right products and services that really match your business goals.
Well, I guarantee anybody listening do not are missing at least part of the things that you mentioned. They either don't have all their passwords put together, they don't have all their keys, they don't have anything about the software and the hardware in their office and how old it is and all this type of stuff and what's on it. And I got computers where I've had people, I think my dad did this too, where he had a log into his computer and he didn't have like an admin backup and something got corrupted. And he couldn't log in. So
it's
I always
worse.
Put an admin password on all the – so you have an extra user to log in.
Well, document it in like a password type keeper program, but it's worse. A lot of times it's a key employee that's a gatekeeper. That's
right.
set up,
and then
set up,
leaves.
Set up your network solutions account, your domain. That set up the application and the software.
Right.
All this stuff is done for you. They leave or they get disgruntled or whatever, and you're
good
screwed.
Luck.
You're
yeah.
screwed.
Yeah.
So a living will document makes a lot of sense. Having it all documented, keep it as a password keeper. You know, don't take it lightly. This is your information. The other thing I want to say about backup and restoration, an easy way to validate that you can restore your data is take a folder on your shared network drive, wherever it is, in the cloud, Google, wherever. Just rename it. Call it, you know, if it's called Steve's Files, call it Steve's Files 1. I don't care. Get a hold of your provider and say, hey, I can't find Steve's Files. Can you restore it for me? And just let them restore it. And if they can't, you know, they're not doing the backups properly, you got a problem. And if they can, great. You delete one of them and rename the folder, whatever. But you never really lost it. You just renamed the folder. So it's an easy way to ensure that you can
just
restore
to
your data.
Test the system.
And if you're the one doing the backup, test yourself. Rename a folder. Do a restore. Now you should have two of those folders, one with the new name and one with the existing name, the old name, rather.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's all. It's all good advice because I think that we just, like you said, we just expect things to always work.
Be proactive.
They
don't. Don't be reactive.
Yeah.
If you like the podcast, please tell others about us. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, on Google Podcasts, on Amazon Music, and many of the other podcast directories. If you like what you hear, please leave us a 5-star review and feel free to share our episodes on social media. If you have any questions or comments, ideas for the show, or you'd even like to appear as a guest, reach out to us by email at info@beinhackerlaw.com. The Accidental Entrepreneur is hosted and produced by me, Mitch Beinhacker. If you'd like more information about my legal services, you can find me on social media or visit my website at beinhackerlaw.com. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe to our feed to be notified of all future episodes.